Welcome to the Nation Magazine Podcasts. You're listening to Nation Conversations, exclusive audio of Nation forums, events, seminars, and salons.
I'm Ron Carey, Managing Editor of The Nation, and I'm happy to welcome Ari Berman, Nation Contributing Writer and author of the book Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. I'm here with Ari now to talk about his latest article, The Austerity Class, how the deficit hawks have manufactured a center-right consensus that rules Washington. Welcome, Ari.
Hey, Ron. Thanks for having me.
So, Ari, talk a little bit about the focus of this article. You start out by pointing out a central paradox of American politics that's kind of dominated the debate over the last 2 years. What is that paradox, and what's at the root of it?
Yeah, so the central paradox is really why, in the midst of a massive unemployment crisis, when not enough jobs are being created and the public wants policymakers to focus on new jobs, how do the deficit instead of jobs emerge as the most pressing issue in Washington today? And then, as a corollary to that, why, when we know that austerity measures would increase unemployment and hinder economic growth, do the advocates of austerity retain such distinction today? And that's really the paradox I looked at. And in investigating why that's the case, I pointed to this emergence of a centrist austerity class, a configuration of politicians, policy wonks, and pundits who have basically elevated the deficit in a very particular center-right way into the most pressing problem in the country today. And they've formed this unholy alliance with the supply-side conservatives, the Grover Norquist of the world. And as a result, basically what's happening is, at a time when we need more government spending to boost the economy, not less, the advocates of austerity are saying we need to cut back on government, we need to cut back on the social safety net, and those are the very people that have had such prominence in Washington for the past few years.
You talk about several components to this that make it powerful. It's not just politicians. It's not just policy wonks. It's not just lobbyists. It's not just funders. It's all of them. And the other thing that makes this class so powerful is that, as you point out, it's bipartisan. And also you say that it didn't exactly spring fully grown 2 years ago. This has long antecedents. Could you talk a little bit about the antecedents in both parties, and in particular, could you talk about the key funders and the organizations involved?
Yeah, so really a lot of these deficit hawk groups that I talk about in the piece, so groups like the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget at the New America Foundation, groups like the Concord Coalition, they were founded by former members of Congress in the 80s and 90s. But they grew in influence, number one, in the Clinton administration because Clinton pursued a balanced budget. And so that created the idea that deficit fetishism, as Nobel laureate economist Joe Stiglitz called it, became very influential within the Democratic Party. And that message was reinforced by some major funders on Wall Street, particularly Pete Peterson, who set up the Peterson Foundation. He was Nixon's former Commerce Secretary, and he also founded the private equity group, the Blackstone Group. So he has very, very deep pockets. And since 2008, he has pledged to spend $1 billion on this anti-deficit, anti-quote-unquote entitlement crusade. And so Peterson was able to give these think tanks and these pundits in Washington some major financial ammunition. And they found common cause with the Obama administration because many of Obama's advisors, people like Tim Geithner, Larry Summers, Peter Orszag, they came from the Clinton balancing budgets wing of the Democratic Party, and they watched somewhat in horror as the Bush administration turned Clinton's surplus into a deficit. And they said to themselves, we need to tackle this deficit. We need a grand bargain that would basically trade cuts to Social Security and Medicare for more liberal policies like tax increases and health care reform. And even though the unemployment crisis was supposedly the top priority for President Obama, and he passed a stimulus, concerns about the deficit were really prevalent in the administration throughout, basically on day one. And that's why that limited the size of the stimulus, and then it really prevented the administration from pushing any larger spending measures to boost the economy because they were so preoccupied by the deficit. And that really elevated the center-right austerity class, which wanted to cut back on government, ironically, at the very moment when we needed government the most.
Right. So in the last month, Obama has done a little bit of a pivot with his speech on jobs, and he's now sort of made a little bit of a populist turn, as everybody knows. Do you think that this is a genuine change? Do you think that the austerity class, either through knowledge about the declining economy or through the power of the Occupy Wall Street movement, do you think that it's going to take a blow, or do you think that it's too deeply established? What is your sense of like the politics going forward and how the Obama administration is inclined to act?
So I think it's a mixed bag. The austerity class does have a lot of institutional power. They do have very deep pockets. They do have a vehicle through the super committee now where they can potentially realize some of their long-held goals. At the same time, the conversation in Washington and among the public has changed significantly, first with President Obama pivoting back towards jobs and elevating jobs as a major issue. But then with the Occupy Wall Street protests, we saw, for example, a media analysis done by Think Progress found that mentions of jobs increased exponentially from July to October, thanks to Occupy Wall Street protests, and mentions of the debt declined precipitously. So we have a lot more discussion in Washington now about jobs and less discussion about debt. So that is in a way a good thing. Now, whether that will actually push politicians to embrace proposals that are big enough to actually solve the problem and whether they can get passed is a whole other question. And what we've also seen is in reaction to Obama introducing his jobs bill, he's been criticized a lot from the austerity class, from these so-called centrist think tanks, from pundits like David Brooks and Tom Friedman. And this idea that Obama is just embracing left-wing populism is in a way making it harder now for him to push his jobs bill because he's getting so much blowback from not only the right wing of the Republican Party, but also from a lot of the self-styled centrists in D.C.
Thanks so much, Ari. For more on this, read The Austerity Class by Ari Berman in the November 7th issue of The Nation.
Thanks, Ron.
Nation Conversations is a product of The Nation magazine and is available on iTunes. You can hear more podcasts at thenation.com/audio. Thanks for listening.